from the high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's 25 or better time zones, all covered like a blanket by this program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, and it's an honor and a pleasure to be with you throughout the weekend. Tonight should be most interesting. Lynn McTaggart is going to be with us in the next hour. This hour will be open lines. After I have a couple of things to say to you. Now, to give you some idea of what last night was like here, I've taken a photograph that a friend of mine, Paul, took. Paul, who lives in town, and manages a company called Air Internet that supplies the internet that I use. Anyway, he went out. I called him. He went out and said, wow. Said, let me get out a camera, and took a photograph. And this was taken last night as I went on the air. And that's on my webcam right now. Take a good look at those cloud formations, and you'll have some idea of why I was a little hesitant to clamp on the headphones last night and dive in. But, like the mail, Coast to Coast AM has to go through. I thought you might like to see what it was that was going on as we went on the air last night. So, go to the webpage, coasttocoastam.com, and click on Art's webcam, and there it will be. That was last night, just as I went on the air. And speaking of bad weather, Ivan, Cayman Islands. Hurricane Ivan battered the Cayman Islands with ferocious 150-mile-an-hour winds Sunday, flooding homes, ripping off roofs, as you might expect, toppling trees three stories tall as the eye passed just offshore. Ivan now has killed at least 65 people across the Caribbean and was expected to strike western Cuba, where residents now have dubbed the storm Ivan the Terrible. That was predictable. On Monday, more than 1 million Cubans were evacuated from their homes. By the way, the latest on Ivan, just prior to airtime here, was that it has regained apparent Cat 5 status. It's back up to 160 miles an hour. And it may pass between the Mexican Peninsula and Cuba. That would keep the eye over water, probably the worst case, headed into the Gulf. So this is one everybody had better keep a very, very close eye on. The only whooshing sound that Hurricane Ivan stirred in the Keys and the populace in South Florida on Sunday was a great big whoosh of relief from residents no longer fearful that this giant storm would make a direct hit. But even as Ivan veered west on a course, it would take it away from that island chain and Florida's east coast. Forecasters are warning that the state, already slammed by two powerful hurricanes in a month, was not out of the woods yet. Certainly not. And as it comes north, despite the computer models and what the forecasters say, it could do damn near anything, as the last hurricane proved. So it could suddenly swing one way or the other. This is a bad, bad storm. Bad things going on in Iraq, as usual. Insurgents hammered central Baghdad on Sunday with one of their most intense mortar and rocket barrages ever, right in the heart of the capital, heralding a day of violence that killed nearly 60 nationwide as security appeared to spiral out of control. At least 37 were killed in Baghdad alone. Many of them died when a U.S. helicopter fired on a disabled U.S. Bradley fighting vehicle as Iraqis swarmed around it, cheering, throwing stones, and waving the black and yellow sunburst banner of Iraq's most feared terror organization. Such a welcome we have, huh? As we free the Iraqi people. Well, a huge mushroom cloud that reportedly billowed up from North Korea was not caused by a nuclear explosion, South Korean and U.S. officials said Sunday, but they said the cause is a mystery. Secretary of State Colin Powell confirmed that unusual activity had recently been detected at some of North Korea's atomic sites, but said there was no concrete evidence that the North's secret communist regime was preparing for its first nuclear test explosion. And I received a lot of mail on this subject, like this from Bill in Fort Lauderdale. Art, don't you smell a BS story here? An explosion big enough to be detected by a satellite? A mysterious mushroom cloud 2.5 miles in diameter? And they don't think it's nuclear. A big hole in the ground, but it's not nuclear. I can't say what kind of event it was, though. Something's funny here. How can they say what it isn't if they can't say what it was? Good point, Bill. So, I don't know. You have to wonder if this explosion in North Korea does not fit what Major Ed Ames has said. I mean, it really does. A giant mushroom cloud. He said he envisioned that, and that's, of course, exactly what we had, nuclear or not. It certainly could have been what he saw, couldn't it? Are you ready for synthetic urine? Yes. A company is making synthetic urine, which sounds something more likely to get Snickers and sales, but it's turning into a small success for a Kansas company. Dynatech Industries, a company bought by Kevin Dykes and his wife Sandra 5 years ago, has developed synthetic urine for the research industry. Now, how much, Colin, for what reason would a person say, well, quick, let's get on the internet and order some synthetic urine? Golly. I suppose it might have application for drug testing, and I don't know. Anyway, this off unknowncountry.com, WITS website, headline, Animals Acting Strangely. We've written recently about animals that are missing or turning up in the wrong places due to global warming and the pole shift. A recent bug splat test in the UK found many fewer insects than expected. And all over the world, scientists are finding hyperactive fish, stupid frogs, fearless mice, and seagulls that fall over, all they think due to pollution. How can you tell if there are fewer insects around? In BBCnews.com, Alex Kirby writes that the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds asked volunteers to use a splatometer, or would that be a splatometer, a cardboard grid developed by the RSPB to see how many insects crashed into their license plates. 40,000 people volunteered for the big bug count, and a number of bugs, the number was much lower than expected, only about one insect for every 5 miles. Fewer bugs means less food for birds, and bugs exposed to too much pesticide can cause birds to act very bizarrely indeed. In one study, male starlings exposed to an insecticide decreased their singing by 50%, meaning they're unlikely to attract females or produce many young. Newts exposed to low levels of the pesticide found it harder to sniff out mates. If this type of pollution continues unchecked, some animal species may suddenly just disappear. Pollution expert John McCartney says, it seems to me this body of evidence was pushed to the background while most environmental scientists and regulators focused on human mortality and cancer rates. So, there you have it. It just goes on and on and on. Here's another one, Yahoo News. Scientists stumped by dead croakers. Thousands of croakers have washed ashore at beaches along the Atlantic coast in recent days, the latest mass deaths of the popular sport fish. Researchers have so far been unable to explain why only Atlantic croakers have been struck along the coast south to Florida. Theories, that's what they are, include a virus of some kind, or perhaps cold water upwellings that shock weakened croakers as they swim along the coast. A team of scientists from Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, and Florida is rapidly searching for answers. The croakers are apparently suffocating, their gills left bleeding in some cases. They've been swimming near the water's surface. Odd behavior for bottom feeders, a favored prize among anglers and watermen. The Atlantic croaker is known for its tough fight on a rod and reel and its pink belly that often bellows a croaking noise when pulled into a boat or under some kind of stress. So they've got uncountable numbers of dead croakers. And I'm still following this SETI story. It's a really weird story. In other words, SETI has detected a signal from 1,000 light years away. But in the story of the detection, they seem to go way out of their way to suggest it could be a fraud, it's fishy, it's puzzling, but it might be aliens. So, I don't know. I'm just going to follow this as closely as I can. And I want to repeat a story that I gave you last night, and then we'll fly to the phones here. Man plans to drop absorbent material into storm. A South Florida businessman says he's going to try to reduce the strength of Hurricane Ivan. That's what's interesting about this. He's going to take a Boeing 747 right to the very edge of the hurricane and begin dumping thousands of pounds of an absorbent material into it. Peter Cardani of Jupiter, Florida, plans to try and knock the storm down by one or two categories by dropping tons of powder that absorbs anywhere between 3,000 and 4,000 times its own weight. Cardani is chief operating officer of Dynamat, a company that sells environmental absorbent products like mats for mechanics. He believes his product SK-1000, he calls it, would cause a shearing action and a 15-degree cooling of that storm. Cardani has been working on his plan for 5 years now. He's assembled a team of experts, including two former astronauts, Moonwalker Edgar Mitchell, and another who tested the lunar module. Cardani is in contract talks to lease a 747 tanker from Evergreen Aviation in McMinnville, Oregon. So he's going to fill it up with this stuff he has, this SK-1000, and dump it into the storm. I wish him luck, and I wish luck to anybody in the path of Ivan the Terrible, as it is appropriately now dubbed. First-time caller line, you are on the air. Hello. Yes.
I know the truth about the UFO stuff.
I beg your pardon?
I know the truth about the UFOs and stuff.
You have the truth?
Yes.
You do. Where are you calling from?
Can I be anonymous?
Where?
Can I be anonymous?
Can you be anonymous?
Yes.
Yes, we'll call you Mr. X.
Okay.
So, Mr. X, what is the truth about UFOs?
Okay. The truth is they're here disguised as us.
They're here? In other words, we are them.
No, they're disguised as us. It's angelic.
So, in other words, as we walk around the streets, many of those we pass are aliens.
Yes, well, kind of more like demons, like
demons,
angelic beings.
And how do you know this to be true?
Because I've talked to some of them.
Because of what?
Because I've talked to some of them.
You talked to some of them,
yes.
And they just, you know, like admitted to you that that's it, they're alien.
Yes, well, see, you're from another dimension.
All right, well, I guess it could be. Actually, that would be a pretty good way to really invade a planet, wouldn't it? To look just like human beings and sort of mix in, I guess. Well, there's a theory. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Where are you?
I'm a truck driver. I'm in... headed south in Florida.
Yes, sir.
Since it's open lines, I've been trying to call for a long time. The Coral Castle down there in Homestead.
Oh, yes.
I know that Richard Hoagland has mentioned many times about a farmer that helped when he moved the entire thing.
Yes.
And that was my uncle that was the farmer.
Your uncle was the farmer who helped move the Coral Castle?
Right, he provided the transportation for it.
Wow.
I remember the stories when I was a kid, and he said that he would have to park the truck at night, and when he'd come back in the morning, the stones would be on it, and he would take it to the new location where it's at now.
So in other words, then, your uncle had no idea how the man got the stones from where they were on to the truck.
Now, I heard him talking to my parents about it, you know, when I was a teenager and stuff like that, but he had no idea because he wouldn't do anything... You know, while he was there, but
did your uncle confirm the size of the stones? You know that it would have been impossible.
Oh yeah, they were just they were so large that there would only be one stone on his flatbed truck,
huh.
And my uncle's name, if I can give it, was Bob.
No, Baker. I'd rather you don't do that.
Okay.
All right. It's quite all right. I believe you. I just, it's an amazing story, and I wish there was more you could tell me about how.
Yeah. I was born and raised there in Homestead, and I've played all over that thing when I was a kid, but it's just a little bit of trivia there that I know for a fact that it was moved one stone at a time.
Well, thank you. It may be trivia, but it's not trivial. And until we can understand how that man moved those stones, or how the Egyptians built the pyramids, or perhaps I should rephrase that, when we can understand how those feats were accomplished, we may have a new energy source on our hands. Anybody out there have any idea how he could have done that? Not that I've heard. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yes. I'm calling because maybe something you might want to consider for discussion is that Los Alamos National Laboratory, their contract is being recompeted in the next year.
Oh.
Yes, and it means very strong possibility that the University of California will no longer be in charge of the laboratory.
So the low bidder might get it, huh?
That could be a problem. Right now, of course, there's a big contractor scramble to take over the facility. I mean, it's the leading scientific laboratory in the Western world, and it would be quite a gem for any of the large contractors.
It sure would. Where did you hear that?
I used to work at Los Alamos.
Uh-huh. So you kind of follow what goes on there.
Oh, yes, I do. I still have a lot of friends there.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no discussion in the current presidential campaign concerning the national laboratories, weapons laboratories.
Is there anything you would like to tell us about the innards of Los Alamos?
Oh, it's a very complex place.
Yes, I'm sure it is. But, I mean, any deep, dark secrets that you might, you know, like to whisper in my ear here.
Oh, deep, dark secrets.
Anything you saw that really sort of blew your mind?
I think probably the things that I saw that were most incredible to me is the plutonium facility is surrounded by a wilderness area. And it's a legend in this wilderness area that it was a sacred ground to the local Indians. Of course, you know, Bandelier is very close to Los Alamos, which is a monument to the first Americans in the area. And that's in the Santa Fe National Forest. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not.
Vaguely.
Yeah. And it just is kind of funny that the facilities where they do criticality experiments at Los Alamos are called kivas. And kivas in the Indian culture are some of the most sacred places for worship, highly spiritual places. And I thought that was always extraordinary that the plutonium facilities and the criticality laboratories were considered to be these high spiritual places. I thought that was kind of unusual that kind of acquisition of Indian spiritualism was acquired by the physicists at Los Alamos.
Fascinating. Well, one thing's for sure, I wouldn't want to be the one doing criticality experiments. And, of course, that involves getting radioactive materials, seeing how close together you can get them. And when the reaction begins, you know, it's tickling the tail of the tiger. I think that was how it was put, right? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art. Just kind of concerned about the propaganda you guys are running there on the ONDCP.
ONDCP?
Yeah, the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
All right, I'll tell you what. I've got to take a quick break. I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll come back and talk about propaganda, all right?
Cool, thanks.
Stay right there. Damn near blew right through that break. All right, you're back on the air. Now, propaganda, what do you mean by propaganda?
During most of your station breaks, you'll have
a commercial for
supported terrorism because I bought a joint for my friend and, you know, all this other happy hoopla. I personally...
That's not what I'm hearing at all. What I hear is when they run the commercials, they're saying, you know, I'm a hypocrite, fine. I smoke pot, but I'm going to advise my child not to. What's wrong with that?
Well, see, now, some of the older ads that happened right after 9/11 were, you know, oh, when I was buying a bag of marijuana, I didn't know I was killing a judge today.
I never heard any of that.
Oh, man, that was
not on our New York. Not on our program.
No, but like I said, yours do have a pretty
I think I just pretty well exactly described what it is that we've got, and I'm in favor of that. I appreciate your call, but I don't, you know, I guess in a way it's propaganda, huh? But it's probably good propaganda. I mean, think about it. A lot of people, a lot of you have lived through the 60s, 70s, 80s, probably smoked pot, but, well, it's probably a good idea to remain a hypocrite if that's what it requires, and advise your children not to do that. This song so well describes what we've got coming up the pike toward us, and we are all riders on this storm.
Riders on the storm, riders on the storm, into this house we're born.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed. It's so easy to get engrossed in what one is doing here and totally blow by breaks. So I'm not going to let this one blow by. We're going to do this one right now. And then we will proceed with open lines and all of you. Hey, and away we go. Open lines until we get to Lynn Metaggart at the top of the hour, this coming hour. Should be very interesting. She'll be talking about, she wrote a book called Living Field, or The Field, actually, The Field. That's kind of like the force, isn't it? The Quest for the Secret Force of the Universe. And I think you're going to find that all of this bumps right into what we've been talking about so much lately. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing quite well. How are you?
Well, we're sitting here in west central Georgia waiting for another one to come.
Yeah.
And like it's headed right up our way.
It certainly looks that way right now, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, sir. Remember last Sunday evening we were waiting on it, and on Labor Day our power went out, you know, early in the evening. Didn't come back on for about 28 hours.
28 hours.
That was 500,000 Georgians.
Yeah, when your power goes out for 28 hours, you realize how much power means to you.
Oh, you're right. You got to have your generator ready.
That's it.
You know? But at any rate, look here, you said something very prophetic last night. I don't know if you remember this now. We were sitting around playing poker. We were in Eufaula getting ready for them. Fishing tournament that may or may not go on.
Mm-hmm.
But you said something about the computers taking over, how the computers will be our enemy.
Well, and, you know, actually what I said was Wouldn't it be something if computers and the Internet really represented the Antichrist?
That's exactly what you said.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that prophetic?
No, I don't know. I hope not. I hope not.
And look here, I really appreciate you directing me to Panasonic's Blue Laser. They'll be out here in February.
Oh, I can't wait.
Oh, I'm telling you. The salesman at the stereo store didn't like it because I'm waiting until it comes out.
Well, that makes two of us. Thank you very much. There's all kinds of things that are going on in the world of high-definition television right now. I read a story the other day indicating that DirecTV is putting up like $1 billion worth of satellites. I mean, just a stupendous number of satellites that are going to be devoted entirely to high-definition television. They're going to virtually put high-definition or translate every channel, all the local channels across the country, into high definition. Already companies are producing, Hughes, for example, producing DVRs that record high definition television, and of course the soon to be famous Blue Laser is coming along. So the world is in the middle of a great big change. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
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 Art?
Yes, turn your radio off, please.
I'm sorry.
That's quite all right.
How are you? This is Desert Chad from San Francisco.
Yes.
Yes, the other night, George had a guest on talking about the giant triangles that are being seen over the populated areas, like over the freeways, over the cities.
Yes.
Do you remember back in, I think it was like 98, you took a call from a guy who was claiming to be from Area 51, and he was running, it sounded like he was out of breath, and he was warning us about these black triangles we're going to be seeing?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd be cool if you could ever find that and just play that call again.
Well, of course, we can find everything, sir.
That's very interesting. I remember you commenting that when the call got disconnected, it was disconnected from the satellite.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
I wasn't sure the black triangles were part of the conversation. It was hard to tell what it was. He was screaming.
Yeah, he was screaming like he was about to die.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
I couldn't remember exactly. I thought he mentioned triangles and that they were extra-dimensional beings.
He might have. There was a lot said, but a lot of it was garbled, and then that satellite began to tumble. Pretty weird coincidence.
It was strange. That's pretty much all I had to say.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for the call. And, of course, the triangles are now very common. NIDS, of course, is following that story very closely, has gotten quite a bit of national press about it recently. And these black triangles, they're real. Whatever they are, they're real. You just have to wonder, whose are they? When that one came over my wife and myself, if I had to make a guess at that instant, I certainly would have guessed that it was not ours, because it was big, it was black, it was lit on the sides and the front, and it wasn't making a sound, and I can assure you it was not flying. It was floating, or it was defying gravity, something I was not aware we had yet figured out how to do. But you never know. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Yes.
Hi. This is John from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Yes, John.
Yes. What I'm calling about is one of your, I'm a longtime listener, one of my favorite guests of all time is Bonnie Crystal.
Oh, yes.
I know you had her on about a month ago, a month and a half ago or something like that.
That's right.
And she refers to, that she has done some writing. I don't know if it's books or magazine articles, but I have gone to bookstores and they have nothing that she may have written. And I don't know if it is books or if it's,
Many years ago, she wrote a book about CB radio. I know that.
Uh-huh.
What else she's authored, I don't know. I'd have to look into it. But I know she wrote a landmark book about CB radio way back when. So.
I see. I just find her fascinating what she does with the caves. And, I look forward to her being on, and I know it's once a year, once every couple of years, you know, it's not too frequently that you...
Well, when she goes to these exotic places and starts going for the deepest holes in the world, it's irresistible to interview her. So
unbelievable.
That's when we do it. Thank you very much. Bonnie is an amazing person, really an amazing person, and she's into electronics. She's very much into electronics, a designer.
And, of course, then takes a month or two out of her year to go to places like Peru and go for the deepest holes in the world. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi. Hello?
Hi.
Turn your radio off, please.
Yeah, this is Ed in Petaluma.
Yes, Ed.
I just had a theory concerning those black triangles.
And that would be?
Well, I just thought maybe they could be government-operated craft. And they're always cruising up and down, you know, near the cities and along the highways, you know, looking for terrorists who might be, moving dirty nukes around.
Well, they certainly don't need triangles to do that. And if they were secret government craft, you would think the last place they would fly them would be directly over the interstates of our country, wouldn't you? I mean, secret and flying over the major interstates of the country, it just doesn't make sense. You might fly over the deserted areas of Nevada and some of the western states, but you certainly wouldn't fly over the major interstates, or would you? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling from Kentucky, and I wanted to ask Art about his personal beliefs as regards extraterrestrial life.
Hmm.
And also ask him about an image on his website that I saw today.
Okay. What was the image?
The image is of, it's of what are claimed to be extraterrestrials, your typical gray aliens, in someone's backyard.
Really?
And, you remember, I don't know if you've seen them or not, but.
No, I have not seen the images you're talking about yet. But, I don't know. If photographs, in this modern day and age are too easily photoshopped up. So, I don't know. As far as my personal belief, that's a very interesting question. Do I believe? Yes, I think I do believe that there is life elsewhere. Do I believe life elsewhere has come here? That's a very different question. But let's step backward. Yes, I believe, how can you not? If you go out and observe silently and quietly and spend a little quiet time just looking up at the nighttime sky here in the desert, we have a very good one, with the Milky Way from one side of the sky, literally all the way over to the other side of the sky, and you realize all you're seeing are suns, stars, and that we now know there are planets revolving around most, if not all, of the stars out there, perhaps not all, but most, that would be an uncountable number of planets. And some of them surely would spawn life. Life perhaps like ours or not like ours, but life. And eventually intelligent life. I mean, the odds are absolutely with it. That's what motivates and continues to motivate the people at SETI, is the fact that when you sit out there and look, it almost has to be. They almost have to be out there. So my personal belief is certainly in that direction. Now, have they come here? Are they here? That part I have not made up my mind about. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, it's John.
Yes, John.
Last night you said something about the hellhole in Nevada.
No, in Siberia.
But then after that you said something about some freaky hole in Nevada?
Yes, that's right. That was a sort of a different story. But yes, there was a hole allegedly discovered here in Nevada. And
whereabouts?
Well, that's just it. I don't know the exact location. That was sort of Mel's Hole Part 2. And we did, I think, two shows devoted to exactly that. And that was a pretty freaky story. And so, if you go back in the archives, if you're able to do that, you can listen to that show and hear all about it. But it was pretty strange. Not to be confused, though, with the hole in Siberia the scientists drilled. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, good morning, Art. How are you?
I'm quite well, thank you.
This is John in Naples, Florida.
Uh-huh.
WNOG 1270.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I wanted to call you a couple weeks ago. After Charlie came by us and did his mess.
Right.
And it was the night that you told everybody that you had your thunderstorm.
Oh, yes.
Because I was going to call you up and ask if there's any cheap real estate out there, because I'm tired of the swamp.
Yeah, I've seen a number of signs in Florida that have the names of the last two hurricanes there, and then Ivan, and that crossed out and goodbye below that. So I guess people are getting sort of fed up with the whole thing.
I tell you, I am. I was out in your neighborhood a couple years ago, and I enjoyed it. It was very nice out there.
It is beautiful, but I'll tell you what. Take a look at the photograph I've got up on my webcam right now.
Uh-huh.
And that was last night as I went on the air. And, well, you know, with all the towers I've got around here and all the electronics, to slam on a pair of headphones when the kind of thing is going on and the kind of cloud formations that you can see in this picture taken last night by Paul are there. It just enters your mind that it might be the last broadcast you ever do. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Yes.
Never get to talk about electric cars very much. Are you interested in that sort of thing?
Well, of course I am.
How would you like an electric car that went 0 to 60 in 3.6 seconds and had a 300-mile range? It is available off the shelf right now if you have $220,000.
$220,000.
They're a bit expensive at the moment, but there's other viable alternatives, and I've got solar on my roof, and I run electric vehicles all the time.
Uh-huh. Who makes the electric car you're talking about?
Oh, AC Propulsion. They're in San Dimas.
AC Propulsion.
It's the same guy that developed the EV1 for General Motors. He started his own company.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, 0 to 60 in
3.6 seconds. I emailed you some stuff about it. There's actually a video of this thing creaming a Porsche Carrera. And it'll beat $500,000 Porsche.
I sure would like to know the technology behind that. That seems impossible.
Well, no, not really. It's just an AC drive. Tom Hanks is invested in the company.
Huh.
They're going to put a scaled-down version of these in Scion cars.
I guess my only question about electric cars would be, it's interesting, but you still have to get the electricity from the grid to run the car.
It's about a penny per mile to run a small vehicle. Do you happen to own a golf cart or anything like that?
No. I have some small electric, I don't know what you'd call them.
Scooters?
Yeah, scooters, I guess.
Those things are like next to nothing. You have to realize a car weighs under 2,000 pounds is about a penny a mile to run. If you get a 4,000-pound vehicle, it's about 2 cents per mile.
Huh.
The RAV4, are you familiar with the RAV4 EV?
I am.
It is as efficient as the Prius, maybe more so, and it weighs another 1,000 pounds more.
It is amazing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's just electrical things are just efficient. The thing's been around for a long time. Tesla did a good thing. Too bad, the powers that be don't want that sort of stuff.
Yeah, too bad indeed. All right, thank you very much. No, I'll look into that. That's pretty interesting, all right. I'm fascinated by vehicles that get extremely good mileage and cost very little to operate. It seems hard to believe. I mean, the laws of physics indicate that, you know, to get so much motion, it's going to cost you so much in electricity. To get X number of miles, it's going to cost you so much. Now, maybe he's correct about that cost, but it seems out of line on the low side. Maybe not. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm Rose. I'm from Kenai, Alaska.
Hi, Rose.
I'm an Eskimo, and some of the things that you guys discussed, my grandmother has told me about the seven dimensions, and she has entered into one of them, and in one of the seven dimensions that she tells about the other beings, which you talk about, the aliens, and she says you can coexist. This is what she told me when she was alive. She's been passed on now for 10 years. And in her belief, the Eskimos, you coexist with these people, and if you don't bother them, they ain't going to bother you.
Maybe there's a lot of wisdom in that, Rose. I think that other dimensions are a reality, and it may well be that those that we think of as aliens from some other planet or system or something are actually from right here and from another dimension. So that could well be correct. And her ancient wisdom could be right on the mark. an awful lot of what's new is really old, you know. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art, I was watching pro football today, and I think you're right about the computers taking over. You know, look at the instant replay delays, the human judgments.
I know. During, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, if there's a questionable call, they can collect, 20, 30,000 votes from the audience about which way it's going to go between the time that they decide it's questionable and the time the referee comes out from under the little thing ready to make his judgment.
Yeah, yeah. I'm still pulling for our own human wetware, you know, our 90% plus water bods more important than the hardware connections, you know, aren't you?
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, anyway, an old Raider fan. I had season tickets back in 70 when George Blanda there, so I had a little heartbreak there. But looking forward to hearing to Lynn McTaggart this tonight, so thanks for your time.
So am I. Thank you very much for your call. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Regarding Satanism, I'll make it quick. If you read the last
book, okay,
the Bible,
you're breaking up here.
If you read the last book of the Bible, it tells you that
you are breaking up. Hello there?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm on a regular landline phone. I can't understand it. You sound clear as a bell to me.
Well, no, you're breaking up here.
Well, can you make out anything else?
Yeah, oh, sure. You're coming in and out, in and out.
Oh, well, then it must be the phone company. Anyway, in the last book of the Bible, in Revelation, the plant is the morning star, which is black. And he also says,
you know, I think somebody does not want you saying this because it's not coming through. You keep saying the last part of the Bible, and from there it goes downhill.
It's obviously being interrupted by something because it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. He calls Peter the rock upon which the built my church. Kept trying to take Revelation. He is the morning star which is Lucifer flat.
I think that he's gone. Well, there you are. We'll be back with Lynn McTaggart in just a moment. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Good morning, Mr. Sunshine. You brighten up my day. Come sit beside me in your way. I see you every morning outside the restaurants.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed. Good evening. Lynn McTaggart's book is called The Field, which might equal the force. I don't know. It's kind of like the force, isn't it? The field. The quest for the secret force of the universe. Lynn McTaggart began work on the field 4 years ago as a personal quest. Her research took her to many areas around the globe, meeting with top frontier scientists in Russia, Germany, France, England, South America, Central America, and the USA. During these meetings, she saw what these scientists were working on, and it seemed to overthrow the current laws of biology, chemistry, and physics. Their theories and experiments also compounded into a new science, a new view of the world. For several years, she immersed herself in quantum physics and pored through hundreds of scientific papers to decoding what was often impenetrable work. In many cases, she had to pester the scientists to explain aspects of physics in order to check facts and interpretations. Lynn concludes that her work paints a picture of an interconnected universe and a new scientific theory which makes sense of supernatural phenomena. So if you're interested, stay right there. No matter... All right, we go all the way to the other side of the Atlantic for this. Lynn McTaggart, I believe, is in probably Great Britain somewhere or another, according to the number I dialed. Lynn, welcome to the program, and where are you?
Hi, Art. I'm in London.
In London?
Yeah, in Wimbledon. We're about 10 minutes from the tennis courts.
It's remarkable, Lynn. We've got a better connection right now than I get with many who are right here close by, and it's wonderful to have you. I love the title of your book. How'd you come up with that, The Field?
Well, it comes from the zero point field, which was what I concluded was the thing that was tying everything together. I mean, from the material I looked at with many of these physicists, they found that this ground state of energy, which is the explosive energy in the space between things, this thing called the zero point field, is the energy field that unites us like an invisible web. It is, as you say, like the force in Star Wars.
It is, really. This energy that we're talking about, Lynn, I know it's speculated about, but has physics actually proven that it really exists?
Oh yeah, it's been around for 40 or 50 years. I mean, the frustrating thing is that scientists, anybody knowing about quantum physics is known about the zero point field, but it messes up their scientific equations. It makes them not fit. So physicists for many years have subtracted it out. It's a process called renormalizing. And in my mind, it's so important. It's, you know, it's been like subtracting out God.
Renormalizing. Now there's a word. Renormalizing. If it doesn't fit, we'll throw it out and then everything will be normal again.
Exactly. And that's what they've been doing. But a few frontier people have been realizing the importance of this, including places like NASA and British Aerospace, who have realized that this energy is so explosive. I mean, there's so much of it. It's even Stephen Hawking has found that there's this sort of thing exists in black holes. That they've been trying to extract this energy from the zero point field for space travel, because they figured, as they call it, it's a cosmic free lunch. If you can get energy out of empty space, you can power things to the next galaxy.
Okay, but they have not yet done that.
No, I mean, it looks like it's the likely thing. There are some scientists who have claimed that they've been able to extract energy, and there are a few studies showing that we can get a little bit of energy out of it now. But
that's right.
It's probably the next big thing.
How does human intention fit into this? In other words, a human intention, it would seem, as I talk to all these remote viewers and all these people who deal in non-things that appear to be non-local, it would appear that they're dealing with this field or this force, if you will, or in the area of this field and force. Do you believe that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They're tapping into the field, no question.
So then human thought, is it your position that human thought, human intention can have physical consequence?
It's not just my belief. I mean, I think there's a lot of scientific evidence of that living intention is an actual physical something. You know, it's a tangible energy, and it is felt in the world, and we have, you know, we have science to prove it. We have science to measure it, to see what it does, and why.
Can you talk about any of that science? I mean, can you tell us what supports it?
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, the theoretical stuff, just to understand why. There are two really important things about quantum physics. I'm not going to bore your listeners with a lot of quantum physics, but there's two things that are important to understand. I always think of reality like unset jello. And it's just this kind of blob of all possible things, because in the subatomic world, when you get right down to subatomic matter, it's an electron is all possible things all at once. It's not any determinate anything. It's like indeterminate energy that exists in all possible states in all time. Unset jelly, as I say. There's another important thing, which is that called action at a distance or non-locality, and that means that if two subatomic particles, two electrons, say, have been in contact, that you could move one to California and one to New York, and they would always know about each other and influence each other over any time or space. And it's like twins separated at birth that marry the same woman with the same name, and if you kick one down the stairs, the other one breaks his leg too, even if one is in California and one is in New York. They always know about each other. So what these two things suggest is that the world is not set, it's unset jello, and that things can affect other things at any kind of distance. So we know that sort of this randomness is just a basic feature of matter, but the one thing that makes this jello set is our observation, our intentions. It seems like we're some sort of ordering systems that set things in a certain frequency, and the medium for this seems to be the zero-point field, because this unimaginable energy that I've talked about, that's doing an energy dance all the time, that's interacting with all of our subatomic particles, and our particles are doing a little dance of an exchange of energy back and forth with this zero-point field. Any shift in the zero-point field can cause massive changes in ground state energy, from particles to atoms, from molecules to matter. And so our ordering seems to cause this sort of shift in matter.
Our intention. So we're the ones who take this jello and give it substance, make it firm, and give it direction.
Exactly. I mean, the way physicists talk about it, they call it the observer effect. They've seen in their experiments that you can't actually figure out everything about an electron, you know, where it's going and what speed it's going at, all at the same time. But the one thing that stops any experiment to give them some sort of result is observation, or when humans take some sort of measurement. So it seems like we almost stop action. If you think of it as a film that's ongoing, we stop action and things happen at that particular moment. So it seems that we are, our act of noticing or our intentions about things create reality at that moment of attention. And then our intention seems to, it's not only that we get the jello set, but we can influence it.
Huh. How great a power do you imagine this to be, Lynn? Ultimately, when it's understood and manipulated, how great a power do you think it is?
Well, I think it's extraordinary, and the problem is that because this is a whole new view of reality, we don't really understand our power. But let's just look at people who have worked on this, people like Buddhist monks. Mm-hmm. They've been doing a lot of work with them at Harvard recently, and they've found that they can wrap these guys in freezing blankets, wet freezing blankets that are, 40 degrees, And within a few minutes, these fellows can air dry it. They can raise the temperature of their bodies so much that they can dry these blankets within a few minutes. Now that is focusing and creating a powerful, powerful intention. Just by thinking this, they can completely change their own physicality.
And can all that be monitored scientifically? In other words, they can put sensors on the blankets. They can know exactly what's being done, even if they don't know how it's being done.
Exactly. Well, they've not only monitored that, but they've monitored what happens in things like meditation. And, that their brains are actually changing. They're making big changes in their brains with constant meditation. Now, we also know this with studies that people have done of healers. They've actually seen that healers, when they heal, when they're touching salt water, they're changing shift, they're making shifts in the oxygen-hydrogen bonds of that water. Almost like a little magnets, they're decreasing the bonding. And they've seen that also with Russian research on mind over matter, psychokinesis, spoon bending. They found that, again, people who are very good at these mind over matter kind of experiments are having influences on the hydrogen-oxygen bonds in water molecules. So there are, our intentions are actually in changing the molecular structures of things outside of ourselves.
Lynn, the Russians have done a lot with this, and so have some other countries. In fact, so much that really they're doing quite some bit more, or at least they were, than we were here in the U.S. or perhaps you in Britain. Is that now changing? Is the United States and Britain, are we beginning to pick up on all of this, or are we still lagging behind?
No, I think that Europe there are parapsychological societies now. There are places at universities like the University of Edinburgh and many places, and of course Princeton, many places around the West, where this is being taken seriously, and they're studying it. They're studying the effects of energies, Earth energies, solar energies on human psyche. They're looking at all kinds of parapsychological ability and studying it seriously, University of Freiburg, another place. I think the Russians still lead us in looking at the effects of other kinds of energies, like solar energies on geomagnetic fields, on our ability to tap into the field.
Why do you think the Russians are so, and have been so far ahead in looking at these areas that we've either been afraid to look at, or I'm not sure why we've been so reluctant compared to, say, the Russians. And I've been curious about that for some time, and I definitely want to talk to you about Princeton as well, but. In fact, let's do that. The Princeton work fully captured my attention with the eggs they've got out there, and we've been talking about this for some time. I think their work is absolutely incredible. I'm sure you've reviewed it very carefully. What do you think of what they're doing?
Well, I think it's unbelievable, because I think that they're demonstrating with the group consciousness project. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The eggs... That if one mind has an effect, then there appears to be the situation that lots of minds thinking the same thought at the same time have a powerful effect. And that's what Roger Nelson and his Global Consciousness Project have been looking at. They've been just running these random event generators all around, in places all around the world, and just monitoring whether or not there's any shift in this random activity when something big happens, like Princess Diana dies, or of course the Twin Tower disasters.
Yes.
They monitored and found that there was a big shift right before the first plane hit the first tower.
I know. I wonder if governments, particularly our government here in America, has begun to take an interest yet. You would certainly think in this day and age of, terrorist awareness and all that we would begin to take an interest in something like that once it's cross some certain threshold of proof.
Well, I mean, you would think so. And the big problem is they probably do, just as they have been interested in UFOs for years and they were interested in psychic spying in the 70s. The problem is the rank and file like us don't find out about that, that they, these are probably black projects where they're, you know, looking into things like this. But the official party line, of course, is that they're not interested, and this is a lot of hooey.
I take it you don't believe that at all.
After the whole Stargate program and the psychic spying, I don't believe it at all. And after talking to people like Edgar Mitchell and some of the views of, you know, his views and his discussions with high-level people years ago about a Men in Black type organization that was in America looking at, you know, UFOs and claiming to privately to have evidence of extraterrestrial life. No, I don't believe it at all. I think these projects go on all the time and are just black programs.
Somebody called me in the last hour before you got on and said, hey, Art, what are your personal beliefs about extraterrestrial life? And I thought real hard about it, and I said, well, go out on a nice starry night, look at all those stars, and you know there are planets around all of them, and I think I do believe there is life out there. How about you?
Well, I mean, interestingly enough, just over the weekend, there was some information that some government has just picked up some signal that they cannot attribute to anything that's out there, any space station, any information as we know it, any kind of life signal that as we know it. So that may be the very beginnings of an official demonstration that there is extraterrestrial life.
Yes, I'm trying very hard to stay up on the story. It's said to be 1,000 light years out, emanating from a place that doesn't make any sense. And the story that talks about it almost poo-poos it as hard as it can, saying, well, you know, maybe it's in the telescope at Arecibo, maybe it's something internal in the telescope, maybe this, maybe that, maybe it's a fraud, maybe a lot of things, but gee, we've had the signal 3 times now, and it's pretty exciting. If we actually did get affirmative word, Lynn, that we did have a signal and there are others, how do you think that would be digested in the world?
Well, I think it would verify a lot of people's beliefs in one sense, and then I think in another sense there'd be a lot of people who'd be fearful based on a lot of the stuff that's come out of Hollywood that these people are going to come and eat us or destroy us. I think that there would be a mixture of excitement, awe, and fear. And
yes,
of course there would be the official, you know, poo-pooing of most of this, and because, you know, the governments have believed that we can't handle information like this.
Well, that's a pretty good question by itself. This apparently initially occurred back in February of 2003, and we're just now hearing about it. Now, I've been told by SETI, and have interviewed many people in SETI, that we would be told right away if they got some kind of signal. Now, I don't know that I'm buying that. How about you?
I don't buy it at all. I mean, it's just, as I say, like the Stargate psychic spying program. I mean, we still haven't got all of the information about that. Only a tiny bit of it has been declassified. And here was extremely good, solid evidence that remote viewing works, that, you know, that we can actually spy on the Russians as mm-hmm. they did in the 70s and spy on other countries through remotely, just through thought. And that, you know, it was hidden, and despite the fact that everybody knows about it now, they still hide the, you know, the data about it. They still haven't declassified all the information.
Well,
so,
that's right.
You know, that's what they do.
All right. We're at a break point here, Lynn. Hold on. And when we come back, I'm going to ask you what I've asked so many others. If remote viewing works, and obviously you believe it does, then why would the government have terminated the program with prejudice just about, right? And is it going on now? A very good question. And any government who could really spy on their enemy, or our enemies, we have many around the world right now, and do it accurately, would they give that up and say, oh, it's nothing? I don't think so.
Now, some velvet morning when I'm straight. I'm gonna open up your gate and maybe tell you about Phaedra and how she gave me life and how she made it in. Some velvet morning when I'm straight.
Flowers grow.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is. Lynn McTaggart from London is my guest. Good evening or morning, everybody. This is going to be fascinating stuff all night long. Stay right where you are. I think through the years, I've probably talked to every remote viewer that was in the secret government program, just about every one of them, I believe. And Lynn, they all say roughly the same thing when you talk to them about why the program was discontinued. They say on the one hand, well, it was very successful with very high percentages of hits. And then when you ask them why it was discontinued, they say, well, they were scared of it, or it was an embarrassment to them, or something like that. And I've never been able to buy that. You know, if it really did work, especially in this current day and age of people trying to sneak in bombs and what have you, perfect targets for remote viewers, how could they possibly have discontinued the program?
Well, I think they talk themselves out of it working. I think that they put together a couple of skeptics who reviewed the data and said, actually, it's meaningless. And it could well have been. I think that this was probably the public face of it, that they, you know, that they used this to sort of poo-poo it to the public. I don't think that that was necessarily the private view, because after the 9/11 tragedy,
yes,
I know some very good remote viewers who told me they were contacted by the government to determine whether or not the seawall right near the Twin Towers had been destroyed, because they were worried about flooding as well as everything else. So, you know, just on that point, and a couple of other ones were asked to try to determine where bin Laden was, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that there still is a private understanding that, you know, that this works.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't, like most things, they don't want to make it public, because I think they're frightened about what the public will do with it.
Or could they have discontinued the one program publicly and, you know, sort of had it reborn as a black ops type thing that we're just simply not hearing about any more than we heard about the first program when it was underway?
I mean, it's very possible. I think that this is what the government does. I mean, we have evidence for that in the, you know, the Stargate program, and evidence since that, you know, that this is the kind of thing they do. If they have something very sensitive and they're concerned about all of us out here being able to use that same ability,
yes.
then they keep it quiet.
Indeed.
But, of course, people like Skip Atwater and Joe McMonagle, who were part of that program, very much indicate that anybody can do remote viewing and indeed teach it. I mean, and that is, you know, we have an upcoming conference in London, and that's going to be one of the workshops, is showing people how to do remote viewing.
All right. What exactly do remote viewers do, or how do they do it, would be, I guess, a better question. Is it a search through this? I've heard it referred to as kind of like Googling whatever is out there. I don't know, kind of like when you go to Google and you put in a search term, you might get a lot of answers to it, and you've got to find the one that makes sense. Or I don't know, how are they doing this? They're going through this zero-point field or this non-locality, or what are they doing?
Well, you got to think of your mind like a radio receiver, not like the source of the information, but just the person that's the thing that's picking it up. I mean, a lot of people like Carl Priebram and people after him who are looking at what consciousness is, what the mind is, are convinced that the mind is not the brain, and that our minds, our brains are picking up frequencies. We're just, as I say, like a radio picking up signals from a radio station. We're picking up frequencies of information and decoding it. And that information largely exists in this zero point field, which is like a memory of everything that ever was. I mean, all frequencies, all the, you know, quantum frequencies, exist forever and can hold unimaginable amounts of information. And so we're just picking that up. Now, remote viewers, ordinarily we have a very narrow bandwidth. We're just picking up radio one. But if you learn to work as a remote viewer, you end up being able to pick up radio two as well. And as I say, we talked about non-locality before and the idea that, that things can be separated, but you can still get information about it. Electrons can get information about each other despite any distance, time or distance. And I think that's what's happening with remote viewers too. They are non-locally picking up frequencies in the zero point field, and they're just training themselves to widen that bandwidth.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. How much has science actually proven so far? In other words, what can you tell us about experiments that have been done? I know something about Princeton and some other things, but how much is absolute truth? I mean, proven science.
Proven science that remote viewing works.
Or any other area that's sort of over the edge of, for example, human intent and influence on something physical or even non-physical, another human being, anything that shows us that working through that field actually does happen.
Okay, well, I have a really interesting thing to answer that with, Art. I was just chatting with Rupert Sheldrake over the weekend, and he was telling me about a really interesting thing he had done recently, because he was tired of skeptics saying there's no evidence for psychic ability.
Right.
And he has studied the medical literature, scientific literature, to see how many studies are truly scientific, which means they're blinded, they're double blind, so that the experimenter and the people being experimented on don't know who is having the experiment and who isn't.
Right.
And he found that with medicine, with ordinary science, it was about 1%, a couple of percents. He found with psychic studies, all the studies of parapsychology, it was 89%.
Wow.
That parapsychology overall had overwhelmingly the most scientific studies of all. And so the answer to you is enormous evidence. I mean, there's certain big holes we have. We need to do many more experiments to find out how powerful intention is, what we can use it for exactly. But we know a lot of things. We know lots of things about what intention does. I mean, we know, for instance, that our intention, we have plenty of evidence that our intention, that there is such a thing as micro mind over matter. Our intention can influence random machines. There's plenty of Princeton work on that. We know our intention can influence living systems. human and otherwise, that we've plenty of studies showing that people can, through thought alone, can control the direction of fish. There have been studies showing we can make gerbils run faster on activity wheels. There have been studies where they've shown that they've been influencing, they've been able to influence blood cells in the lab. But then we know there's lots of studies on humans healing, that people can calm people, can calm down nervous people. Loads and loads of studies on healing.
And yet all of this still seems very much on the edge of what might be when we really figure this out. You know, we're sort of working in the margins, at the very edge, influencing the most influenceable, the machines you talked about, the computers that are spitting out random numbers, and just a slight bit of something or another manages to make it non-random. Just sort of on the very edge of things, but somewhere behind all of this, there's a very great deal of power, I have this feeling.
Oh, I think this is, again, when you study people who have been able to really control this, like sensitives of all sorts, as they call them, you know, shaman, or look at Buddhist monks who have really developed a discipline of mind to widen their ability, mm-hmm. the ability that we all have but we're not told and we don't think we have through the paradigm that we're given of how we work and how the universe works. When we understand there's a different way that we actually work and there's a different paradigm out there, then through developing these things, we have many more powers. We have, you know, it's something present in all of us.
Well,
so it's not this arcane, weird thing.
Well, when you ask remote viewers about remote influencing, they tend to get very quiet, and they don't want to talk a whole lot about it. And so I thought I would ask you about it. Remote influencing is a pretty scary thing to a lot of people. Maybe it's what even, perhaps it's what scared the government away. Who knows? But if is it possible to remotely influence another mind?
Absolutely. Well, we know it's possible to remotely influence another body through all those healing experiments that we've talked about. I mean, the great studies of the late Elizabeth Targ, who got healers all across America to heal terminal AIDS victims. And she found that it didn't matter whether they were Christian healers or they were Native American shaman. If they had a good intention to heal, they, you know, it worked. And so there's, you know, if you can influence a body, mm-hmm. you probably can influence a mind too. And it is frightening because, again, we don't know what, you know, what is the limits of the power of intention? Larry Dossey did his wonderful book, Be Careful What You Pray For. He studied negative prayer. He was really interested in all of that. You know, does the voodoo effect really work? And he found there was, you know, a lot of evidence for that. But there's also some preliminary evidence saying that you can block, you can almost put a psychic shield around yourself and block negative influence. But once again, it's something that we all have to learn. It's just the same as saying, well, we could be hurt. Somebody could come over and stab us. That possibility exists, but we take certain precautions. So we just need to learn how to take psychic precautions now.
Uh-huh. Well, apparently so. So it doesn't really matter whether the intent is positive or negative. Now, there are some who really loudly proclaim that negative intention will not work. The only thing they say that will work is positive intention. I think that's wrong. Isn't it?
I think it's wrong too, but I'm, you know, again, this is an area we really have to look into. This is what needs to be, I mean, this is one of the things that we're working on at the moment. We're working on some intention experiments. I'm setting up some experiments with some scientists, some noted scientists, to just take this, to push this boat out a bit more, to find out, you know, well, what is the limits here? You know, how fast can it work? Can we help? Can we just send out intentions to heal people faster? You know, we are working mostly on our, on positive intention. But of course, one wants to, you know, one of the experiments we want to do is to look at a positive versus a negative intention and see if one has the bigger effect.
Or if you really want to walk out on a plank, Lynn, does it, certainly there have been a lot of interesting conclusive studies about prayer. And the person prayed for it does not even have to be aware of the fact they are. So you can throw away the voodoo aspect of it in that sense.
Yes.
It works. We know that much. Now, let's think for a second. Does it matter whether the prayer is made in God's name or not?
No, it doesn't. Because look at Elizabeth Targ's studies again. She was using some people who were Christians. And she was using some people who used a grandmother, in Native American figure called Star Woman.
Yes.
And both worked just as well. And I asked her what was the common factor that made it work. And she said, well, all the healers said the most important thing was just to get out of the way, get your own ego out of the way and just sort of ask, please may this person be healed. Ask a higher power. So I think that the higher power is, whatever you want to call it, the absolute is the only important thing to get in touch with in some way, in your own way. And that can be many ways. I mean, a lot of people is just getting into some sort of alpha state, slowing your mind down to a slow meditative state. That seems to be the important factor.
Well, there are a lot of religious groups that would be very upset about that. I remember watching a couple of movies I can't remember their names now, but it doesn't matter. This lady in the movie had a great power, and the people in her community demanded that she say this power was from God. And I'll tell you what, when she wouldn't do that, they were ready to burn her at the stake.
Well, I think that, it's important for everyone to understand that, we all have different gods. We all have a different view of God. And, I defy anybody out there, any religious group, to define what God is. And I think that the only important thing to really say here is God is to acknowledge an absolute, not necessarily to say it is the man with the white beard, but that there is a God out there and that I mean, for instance, a lot of people have asked me about the field. Does the field, challenge God? And I say, no, the field proves God.
Hmm.
The field proves there is a God out there. And there is an absolute, there is a force beyond us that we are all one with. And the big problem always with everything, whether it's 9/11 or this kind of challenging that this person has said, it's about, the biggest problem is about thinking you are separate. And that's where all of our problems in the world stem from, is the notion that we are all separate beings on this lonely little planet in a lonely little universe. That's the view biology gives us. And then we build our religions on, but actually if we understand the true nature of what scientists are saying now, what I'm trying to say in the field, it's that we are all one. We're all part of this giant energy field. We are not separate.
But does it actually confirm the presence of God, or does it simply confirm that we inevitably attach the name God or magic to anything we do not understand? And someday we may understand the force, the field, whatever it is. We may gain an understanding of it. It may not have anything to do with a higher power, an entity, the bearded God of the Bible. It may have to do with something that we just haven't discovered yet.
Yeah, but I think there's an understanding that there is, whether you want to just call it energy field, that there is a higher energy field that we are part of. And that, to many people, is an absolute energy. It's an absolute force. That's why I say I like Larry Dossey's word, the absolute, because it is, it is about a God. Now, it's just words sometimes, but you could call, the Holy Ghost, or you could call being in a state of grace being in the field.
Yes.
And it's just a different way. As I say, I think what I'm trying to do is provide a science of spirituality. And to say that there is validation for people's beliefs, because science is now catching up with it and proving that these sorts of things exist.
It absolutely is. Do you have any idea where it goes next? We know what research is going on right now. Where is it going?
Well, as I say, I'm working on some intention experiments and just trying to push the boat out to see to try to quantify what we can do with this. And then there's a lot of study now looking at trying to work out how do you, this incredible energy field with, you know, I always say that, you know, if you were sitting a few yards away from me, there'd be enough energy between the two of us to boil all the oceans of the world. I mean, it's that kind of energy density. And there's a lot of scientists around the world working on trying to get energy out of the zero-point field. And there are scientists all over the world trying to work out a bit more about what happens during states of meditation. You know, how is it changing your brain? And what are we doing? And other studies showing that when people do healing or send out an intention, that it not only changes the fabric of what they're healing, as I say, changing the oxygen-hydrogen bonds, but they can measure energy coming out of people, that voltages of coming out of healers just zooms up enormously. And they're trying to figure out where and how this, you know, this energy is coming out.
Yes. Yeah, so they have actually measured an increase in what, the brain activity?
Well, there's a measurable energy that comes out. There were two people who did very interesting studies on this. A physicist called William Tiller.
All right, hold it right there. We're time pressed to the top of the hour. We'll jump right back on this when we get back. I'm Art Bell. That would be the Caribbean.
I see earthquakes and lightning. I see bad times.
This is Coast to Coast AM.
Don't go around tonight, but if you found me, take your bag. There's a bad moon on the right. I hear hurricanes are blowing.
Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Huh. The field. The force. I have a feeling that we're talking about the driving force of the universe. That's really what we're trying to talk about, but since we don't understand it yet fully, we can talk just about what, you know, what we know so far, and it's so little in a field so big. Nevertheless, one of the experts in it, Lynn McTaggart, back in a moment. Stay right where you are. You're listening to Coast AM. back now to London, England, and Lynn McTaggart. Lynn, we were talking about actual measurements that are being taken, people in states of meditation, that sort of thing. So I assume that we can measure activity in the brain as these things are going on, but have we yet measured any actual external influence at all? In other words, we don't have the slightest idea if there is radiation external to the brain on what frequency or where it's occurring. We don't know, do we?
Well, we do. There have been some really interesting studies both by a fellow called William Tiller and also the biofeedback expert, the guy who came up with that, called Elmer Green. Elmer Green did a study of healers in what he's called the copper wall experiments, because he put them all in this room that had all copper walls, which would shield out any other electromagnetic energy. And he then had them, you know, send out healing intentions while they were all hooked up to sort of machines that measured the voltage coming from their bodies.
Right.
And he found out when they sent out a healing intent, their voltage, their electricity sent out, went up 100,000 times. So we had an actual measurement like that just blasting out of them. And he also found out where it was coming from. It was coming mainly from their abdomen. So in Eastern thought, you know, they talk about that being the seat of emotions and one of the really important chakras. And that's where it was all coming from. The same thing with...
But were they measuring it beyond the copper room?
No, because it wouldn't be able to go through the copper room. You remember, they were trying to filter out electromagnetic rays, so they were measuring it inside. But I don't think that the nature of the experiment was to see that whether or not it would go through the copper walls. I think the walls were there to prevent other electromagnetic radiation coming in.
I see.
So the key thing was really just trying to find out, you know, is intention an energy? And they found out, yes, indeed, it is. Hmm. And the same thing with William Tiller. He measured gas discharges of people sending out intention, and he found that electrons being emitted from people also zoomed up by thousands, tens of thousands of times with the act of human intention. So these are two very interesting studies showing that, you know, intention is an actual physical energy that gets sent out. It just, a frequency goes up.
Lives in Morris Plains, New Jersey. I get these computer messages as I go on here. It says, negative intentions definitely work, but they create a caustic backlash, karmic thunder that may last a lifetime. I, for one, would never participate in that kind of experiment. So she's saying that, yes, negative intentions work, but, you know, those who practice the craft, witchcraft, are quick to tell you that negative intentions do work and can be used, but they have consequences.
Well, I think, you know, this is one of the interesting things that we really need to do. There are a lot of traditional cultures who understand all of this much more than we do. They understand it intuitively rather than scientifically, but they've used these kinds of practices for years, and I think it's really important for us to study traditional cultures to see what they're doing. They all understood about the effect and the power of the life force. They all believed in a life force. They all believed in the power of intention, and many of them use, you know, their shaman, their medicine men, all those kinds of people go into trance type states or, you know, alpha states, whether they use drumming, or, you know, other means, and they use intention to heal. And they've also understood about the power of negative intention, but generally speaking, through all of these cultures, the idea, and again, I'm just looking at, you know, the science of things, but the idea is that, you know, positive prayer is more powerful than negative prayer. Mm. And positive thinking is more coherent. We've talked a bit about quantum physics, and an important point is coherent frequencies. That is, frequencies that are more ordered and communicate better. It seems to be that positive intent has, or positive thought has a more coherent frequency. Just looking at sort of the work of Asaro Umoto, the messages of water, where he's looked at the effect of thought on water crystals and found that positive, loving thoughts create more coherent water crystals. So there would be that kind of evidence to support it.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because I wonder about the negative intent of those who wish us harm. The world is full of negative kinds of intent right now with regard to the terrorism going on.
Yes.
And it's possible that what registered and threw the charts right off the top at Princeton prior to 9/11 was a negative intent. What about that?
Well, I think there was some sort of shudder in the, you know, it's like when Yoda says, I feel a disturbance in the force.
Yes.
I like to think of it like that, because I think that it was a collective shudder at what was about to happen, that we all had a precognition. We had a forecast of what was going to go on. And we felt it as a collective mind. And certainly there were plenty of people. Again, Rupert Sheldrake did studies of, he asked for a lot of information of whether anyone had dreams about it beforehand. And many, many, many people wrote in with incredibly specific dreams where they had forecasted the 9/11 tragedies.
Yeah, I know. He's an amazing man. I just interviewed him, as a matter of fact. God, he's just an amazing man. I have to wonder why there are not more people doing this work, or are there about to be?
Well, he is a treasure. I mean, I think that there are a number of scientists around the world doing work, as I say, in these little pockets of organizations. They all know about each other. They're a small group, and they do work. They have to compete for the same kind of funding. I mean, the big problem is it's not like, you know, studies on drugs, which are funded by giant, powerful pharmaceutical companies. You know, these have to be funded by small grants, and they are organizations that in the main work independently. So that's their big tough problem is the money.
But their work has been so successful so far that you would think more would be rushing in. One of the questions that I was going to ask you has to do with, oh, I don't know, I do an awful lot of shows here on things like ghosts and the possibility that the human spirit or the human mind or whatever it is that we are lasts past physical death. Is there evidence that our thoughts have an independent energy that does, in fact, last past our physical death?
Well, I think that the really interesting work in that field was done by the University of Arizona, and they did work with mediums. This is Gary Schwartz's work, where he did double blind studies and very controlled studies of mediums, and whether they were picking up information beyond the grave. And there certainly was evidence of that, and there was evidence that no science could explain in any other way than they were picking up information from that energy, some energy information about those people still existed.
Yes.
Whether they exist in a corporeal being or whether or not it's just their energy fields are still back in the field, there was certainly evidence for that. And the other interesting studies, of course, are the latest ones on near-death experiences. I mean, there has been plenty of anecdotal evidence, but people in Holland have done some studies on near-death experience where people were absolutely, their brains were dead.
Yes,
I mean, it was like a computer being plugged out of with the plug being taken out of the wall. And yet, they had all very similar experiences, the light, the tunnel, the whole thing, meeting with the relatives, etc., and were able to describe things going on. I mean, one of the most interesting ones was a guy who was an accident victim. He comes rushing into the emergency department in this Dutch hospital, and he was wearing dentures, and of course he was a mess. And so the nurse there took his dentures out and put them in what they call a crash cart.
Mm-hmm.
And several days later, when he woke up and got back from his near-death experience, he was talking to the doctor, and he said, and that same nurse came in, and he said, ask her, you know, ask her where my, she knows where my dentures are. They're in that cart. Now, the guy was clinically dead when these teeth were taken out of his mouth, and he saw the whole image from outside of his body of these teeth being taken out and put in this particular crash cart.
Now, I've done some interviews, Lynn, that absolutely are astounding. I'm going to be doing one next week with a near-death experiencer who was blind from birth. That's going to rock people right back on their socks. And the other thing that's grabbed me that I don't understand, I haven't been able to disprove, and I've really tried, I have these people I interview with regard to electronic voice phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
And these are voices imprinted on electronic media, whether it be tape or otherwise, that simply have no explanation on the face of the earth other than they're coming from what we call the other side, or people who have passed on, or whatever. We do it again and again and again. I guess all the way back to Thomas Edison was even experimenting with some of this and thought that he could hear the other side. Some of these voices are quite clear, and they're coherent with respect to ongoing reality. It's really freaky stuff, but it does seem, there seems to be something to it.
Mhm. Mhm. Well, again, I mean, when you look at the evidence for things like near-death experiences or the medium stuff, you've got to open your mind to any possibility and not just clamp it shut with your, you know, the same old thoughts or the same old paradigm. It's even, you know, scientists are discovering that, you know, we talked about non-locality, that occurs in time as well as space. And these are traditional scientists. We're talking about stuff that's been published in you know, conservative publications like New Scientist.
Yes.
And they're showing that, you know, when you have an experiment and you measure it 1 minute, you have one thing. And then you measure it the second minute and you affect not only that electron, but the one you were measuring before. And what that all means, the implications of that are staggering. It means that, you know, that these connections we've talked about that are, you know, that can occur over vast distances despite any, you know, contact can occur in time as well. And there have been plenty of studies showing that remote viewing, remote influence can occur backwards, so to speak,
that's
as well
right.
as forward. And so, you know, we just have to suspend all of our notions about the way the world works, because the science is showing it works very, very differently.
And about time. Remote viewers will be the first to tell you that what they do has no relationship to time, one way or the other. And it doesn't really matter. Backwards, forwards, present time, it's all one to them.
Well, that was the fascinating thing about one of the studies that was done with, you know, the Stargate guys out in California, the SRI people. They worked with a guy, I'm sure you've talked about this before on your show, called Pat Price, who was one of the great remote viewers of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And one time he was working with Russell Targ, physicist Russell Targ, and they asked him to describe a place where one of the experimenters was, and he described and drew a swimming pool, but he had two towers there, and there were sort of two tanks, and everything was right, the swimming pool was right, but the tanks were wrong, and they thought just, well, this must have been a chance of time when Pat Price got it wrong, and years later, after Pat had died, Russell got information about that town. It was Palo Alto. It was from the Chamber of Commerce, and it had pictures of the town and what it was like 50 years ago. And they had a picture of the swimming pool, and actually at the time it was a municipal water supply, and there were tanks there. And they were just where Pat had drawn them. So when Pat saw the scene, he didn't see it in 1970s or whenever the date was. He saw it 50 years before.
Wow. So I wonder, you know, time is one of my favorite subjects. I just absolutely love it. And that would indicate that the time is almost meaningless. In other words, in the right arena, you can travel forwards, backwards. You can just move about time as we would move about geography now on Earth.
Well, I think a lot of the experiments show that. We talked about the influence on these remote, these random event generators, and there have been some really interesting studies of that, as well as remote viewing, where people have been able to influence, they've used taped versions of these machines, which are random throws of the dice, throws of a coin, like heads or tails, and ordinarily, let's say they have a taped message, it would be, or a taped output, it would be 50% left clicks in your ear and 50% right clicks. And they've had experiments where they've asked people to think about making more left clicks than right clicks. Mm-hmm. And if they send out that intention and it's playing at the time, they often, you know, they get the result, right results a significant amount of the time. Well, some of these studies have tried to do it where they've played the tape of this left and right click random thing on Monday and then had the experimenters play the tape for themselves on Thursday. They've kept a master of that original tape, and if it were truly random, it would be 50% left, 50% right clicks. When they've had the person think about it and think about changing it, even though the tape was already made, and say they wanted more left clicks than right clicks, they would find a significant amount of the times that they actually had affected that the original playing of it. So this sounds very confusing, but what happened was the intention actually reached back down the timeline to affect the generation of that tape in the first place.
Wow.
So, I mean, again, these kinds of studies just absolutely blow our notions of time and make it more as one great big smeared out now.
All right. There have been a lot of experiments that I know you're aware of with plants, remarkable experiments with plants and with animals. And we talked a little bit about this last week, you know, with the animals knowing that their owners are coming home, that kind of thing.
Yes.
As we learn more and more and more about animals and plants, doesn't it almost, isn't it going to at some point demand a redefinition of our relationship with plants and animals?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the real interesting evidence, too, beside Sheldrake's work on the on dogs knowing when their owners are coming home, so and the psychic pet stuff, is also Cleveland Baxter's work. And, I mean, Cleve is also coming to our conference. He's been doing worked for 40 years. He's the premier lie detector expert in the world. And he's, you know, he's called by the FBI, and whenever you want anybody, you know, he's your man who wants on lie detection. And he teaches it. This has got to be about 30, 40 years ago. Cleve was just curious, and he was playing around one day, and he thought, you know, well, maybe I'll hook up a plant to a lie detector. Mm. And, you know, lie detectors measure autonomic nervous response. They
right.
measure our, you know, our fight or flight mechanisms. And when we're lying, that all that stuff races. You know, our hearts race, and we sweat more and all of that. And that's what a lie detector picks up. So he attaches a plant to this thing. And he thinks to himself, I'm going to kill you, plant. The plant registers a freak out. The plant registers a fight or flight response. So this completely blows Cleve's mind. And he continues to do these kinds of experiments over years. And he has found that plants will register to other plants. If you are about to try to destroy another plant, another living tree thing, one plant in the area will register that. If you try to, and it's not just plants, he's trying to all living cultures.
How can that be? Hold on, Lynn. We'll be right back. I'm Art Bell in the Middle of the Night, which is where we do this kind of work.
Where the heartaches come
talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
And Lynn McTaggart this night. Fascinating stuff. You know, I'm a meat eater, so this is not easy for me to suggest, but I have had a nagging feeling, just one of those things in the back of my head for a long time that I've been thinking about. If plants and animals are much more than we think they are, and perhaps closer to us in many ways than we've imagined, then at some point, science, if it does go down this road and discover there's so much more, is going to have to redefine, or we're going to have to redefine, our relationship with both of them. We'll ask more about this in a moment. Seems to me we were talking about lie detectors and plants and such, Lynn. But I really mean that. I've had this nagging feeling for a long time now that plants and animals are more than we imagine them to be, and there's more to them than we imagine. You know, and we grab a hamburger and love it, and a nice salad and all the rest of it. But is it possible that we're going to come to some point where we redefine our relationship with these entities?
Well, yeah, I think it's, I mean, what Cleve Baxter's work suggests is that, you know, we are part of a vast ecosystem that feels every tremor that happens. I mean, it's pretty scary thinking. But Cleve's work has also shown that things like yogurt, if you've got yogurt in the fridge and you take some more and throw it down the sink, that the yogurt in the fridge registers a reaction. I mean, that cells, you take cells of a person and you take them out in a laboratory, and he's been able to measure that the cells, say sperm cells, outside a man's body register things, you know, register when he's upset, the cells are upset too, even if they're someplace remote in a lab. So, you know, this is all suggesting, as I say, getting back to Yoda, where he says, you know, I feel a disturbance in the force, where they, Cleve's had demonstrations that if you, something dies in an area, let's say a pond, that it's, and a little fish dies in the pond, that some of the plants around the pond will register that. So there's, you know, this disturbance in the forest. So it really is suggesting that we're all part of this vast ecosystem, and that we all feel each other, you know, energy frequencies all the time. If this is the case, then yes, we have to be really, you know, thinking about what we're doing, and be a lot more conscious about what we're thinking all the time and what we're doing all the time.
Okay, so there's a suggestion then, there's a universal connectedness, that everything's connected to everything else in some less many times than conscious way.
Yeah, well, remember we're getting back to talking about the zero point field, looking at it, you know, what is a good explanation for it is if we, you know, boil down everything in the universe, boils down to little energy packets of pulsating energy, doing a little energy dance, passing back energy back and forth with the zero point field, almost like a medicine ball being passed between two people. That's what's really going on. So if that's going on between all the electrons and all the subatomic particles in the universe, including us, including everything else in the world, then we would be in touch in some way through everything, through the zero point field, with everything else. And we would feel it in some, on some level. So it's, you know, a matter of us finding out how to tap into this more, and how to sense it much more than we do at the moment.
Okay, Lynn, then you know, Lynn, it seems like in our modern world, we're going in exactly the opposite direction in terms of recognition of this, of everything being connected in some way, of the earth itself, plants, animals, and our relationship to the earth. If you look at the American Native, for example, they have been, I don't know, understanding all of this and their connection to the earth, and while we march forward on the internet and other technological wonders that we've achieved, we're moving in that direction while the American Native is sort of being lost and forgotten and back there, and they knew about this all along.
Well, that's it. I mean, I think it's really time to actually study what these cultures have done, not thinking, oh, these are quaint, cute practices. They actually were much more intuitively closer to what's real than we are now. And our big problem is the place that science is taking us, because...
Well, it's taking us away. It's taking us
completely away. The current view of biology is moving more and more with the neo-Darwinists to the idea that we are some sort of genetic mistake, and that we're just, you know, this body is just a husk for these genes, and these genes just sort of march along like, you know, like thugs, just using us and discarding us when they're through. And the same thing, you know, they're looking into smaller and smaller elements and isolating more and more the genome code and thinking this is the way to heal, rather than looking at things much more holistically. Science is pushing us to a place of greater separation. But the Native cultures, they have a whole different sense of time. They think of time as a circle, not an arrow.
That's right.
And they think of, you know, connections with their ancestors, that their ancestors are somehow walking here and are in our constant presence. And the same thing with just about all of their views are a sense of connectedness that, you know, we must study and understand.
Tell me about your book, The Field. How long has your book been out, and where can people get it?
People can get it in bookstores, hopefully, still, on Amazon, and also through our website, which is livingthefield.com. We have it there, and we, you know, we've gone on, Art. I published the book in 2002, and I got hundreds and thousands of letters from people all over the world saying, you know, I really believe this, so what do I do about it?
Yes.
And that's the big question now, is how do I live this?
All right.
And it's been a big question for us, too. I mean, for me, and the work that I've been doing since has been very much about...
And what answer do you give to that now?
Well, it's a matter of educating ourselves, alone and in groups, about how to live a more connected life. And, I mean, as I say, I've been studying it and have been working with a number of people, and we've developed a course called Living the Field, which is a monthly, like a publication, that's a monthly master class. And it includes a bunch of different people who are experts in a variety of things, and they are teaching people how to do healing, remote viewing, expanding their consciousness, looking at native cultures and native awareness, studying earth energies, which is a big thing of mine now, the effect of geomagnetic effect of from solar energy and planetary energy on how we live our lives.
How could it not affect us?
Well, a lot of people don't think it does, but I mean, that's been a big thing. But all of these sorts of things, dreams and how to use dreams more, you know, more effectively. But we're always looking at the science of all of this and trying to develop that also with exercises. But a lot of people as a result are starting to develop small groups. And we've been encouraging this again on our website, where people who believe this and are trying to work on this new paradigm are feel very alone. I'm sure this is one of the great things about your show, Art, is it brings together like-minded people all over the country.
It does, yes.
And we're trying to do that in local places where people are setting up little groups to practice some of this together. You know, groups of 8 and 10 and 20 in their community. And we are holding conferences, which are educative conferences and workshops and things. And as I said, we have a big conference coming up in October, on 9th and 10th of October, which brings a lot of experts together who are trying to teach people and hold workshops to help people expand their consciousness and expand their ability in remote viewing cosmic consciousness, understanding how to do forecasting through their dreams and, you know, how to live a more holistic life.
Lynn, I guess I've got to bring up this topic with you. How do you feel about mass experiments? I toyed with some experiments, I think you're probably aware, that just, frankly, at the end of it all, scared the hell out of me. I realized that what we were doing was working, but then I, you know, asking millions of people to change the weather, for example, or to manipulate the course of a hurricane, something I've definitely stopped doing. That kind of scale, too early for that kind of thing, I would think. What about you?
Well, some of the experiments we're working on, we're going to need a bunch of people, but we want to work on a very controlled basis, you know, working with scientists. And I say, I agree with you. It's very scary to try to do it with millions of people. But I think, you know, if it has to be very carefully targeted, like saying, I'm going to target at a very specific, say a little hospital or something like that, and target people who have a very specific problem that you can quantify and try to change, and work on certain people doing something very, very specific together, and have that, you know, as I say, controlled in lots of different scientific ways, because we have to understand the power. I mean, I understand from your experiments that, you know, the weather changed drastically, that you had great, incredible, almost too much success. Is that right?
That is correct, yes.
Yeah. And I mean, and as you say, it scares you because you think, well, this is some inordinate power that we have to somehow, you know, tame and understand more before knowing what to do with it.
Before tampering around with the big things like hurricanes and that sort of thing. It astounded me. I mean, it just, you know, doing what I do, because I have access to millions of ears, you know, we were able to toy around with that kind of thing. And I think back about the hubris involved in doing that, and I go, oh, man, where was I? But I did manage to prove that it really does work. But then where to go from there? And certainly a talk show host is not the right guy to do it. We need some hard science and hard dollars behind this effort.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I'm doing with my next book and the book that I'm working on at the moment. We're working on trying to define and to look further on the whole power of intention. And we're working with some really good scientists. And the point is to really use this. And I think, you know, I think you need to use it for good deeds. You know, I think I think the people who talk about, you know, it has to be used for some positive reason. I think it needs to be very positive and very specific. And so those are some of the things that we're trying to look at the moment. But it is, you know, it's important to do this. So I don't think you should castigate yourself for doing it. I think it's important to have proved it, that there's something here, but that in order for the science world to take it seriously, it's like with those parapsychology studies. They have to be whiter than white. They have to be better than regular science.
Right.
And even then, they're still not taken seriously. So my point is that I want to work with I'm talking with some of these really top scientists who are going to develop such airtight experiments that there's just going to be no question that they work.
Well, the sun is interesting. I watch geomagnetic events, and I watch geomagnetic storms, and I can't help but think that geomagnetic energy streaming at the Earth has an effect on the beings who live on Earth. And I wonder if there's been any study done between geomagnetic events and people's behavior.
There's loads. I mean, it's really interesting. I've been doing a lot of work on this this is one of the things that I've been writing about in this course that I've been talking about that we do. And, you know, we think of the old astrology. I call it the new astrology because the old astrology is, you know, the sort of idea of natal position is destiny and that everyday placement of the planets affects your life and your luck.
Right.
But, I mean, with this new astrology, and there's tons of scientific evidence on this, that it demonstrates that the energy generated by the sun, the moon, and the planets affects human energy, and it affects your ability to tap into the field.
Well, I can tell you from doing a talk show and dealing with the public out there on a regular basis that it's true, Lynn. When you have a full moon, for example, people behave differently. Firefighters, police, people in public service, they can all tell you it's true, and it is true. But why is it true?
Well, it has a lot to do with the effects. I mean, there's the effects of the sun. The effects of the moon, and profoundly, most profoundly, the effects of the sun. You know, when we think of the sun, we think of this very hot entity, but we don't realize how explosive this thing is, that it's just this sea of violent and unpredictable space weather. And I've been looking a lot into space weather. It's really fascinating stuff. Because,
oh, it sure is.
You know, it is just this violent thing. You know, our Earth is surrounded by this geomagnetic donut. It's the geomagnetic shield. And what's happening from the sun is this: the sun is hurling at us solar flares, and there's solar wind, which is 2 million miles per hour, and these coronal mass ejections, which are, you know, like throwing a billion tons of gaseous matter at us.
That's
hurled,
right.
Hurled at the Earth. And about a third of the time, there are these vast geomagnetic storms, which have profound effect on biological systems. We know through studies that they can affect even little primitive systems like algae, but they will affect animals that migrate. Homing pigeons can't get home. They forget, you know, that it just screws up their antennae for getting home, and they smash, is the way it's termed.
There's been a lot of that lately, Lynn. I don't know if you've been following it, but animal behavior is quite strange, and migratory birds have been crashing and not migrating, and a lot of very strange and unsettling things have been going on in that regard.
Well, I think, you know, they've said that there's a huge, I mean, one of the reasons for the very strange weather that we've all been having is that the sun has been pretty busy of late, and there's been an awful lot of activity, and there was a huge solar flare last autumn about a year ago upset all sorts of things for a long time. But they're finding that this is, you know, these kinds of geomagnetic storms, you know, have effects on, they mess up all sorts of electrical stuff and radio things, but they also have profound effects on us. They have, you know, they have huge effects on our cardiovascular systems. Our blood gets about twice as thick as normal. Mental illness, epileptic seizures, you know, psychiatric hospitals have many more people of sort of flooding in when there's a lot of solar flares.
All of that said, Lynn, are you familiar with a project called HARP?
Yes. The big worry is whether or not this is going to have a lot more effect on the geomagnetic shield.
There are many of us. One of the stated purposes of HARP is to, for example, be able to affect the ionosphere and cause a reflection to occur and actually, for example, depress an attacking army or an army that's about to attack, have a mass effect on human beings. And one has to wonder if the government, through HARP, has not begun to experiment in exactly these areas, toy around in these areas. What do you think?
Well, you know, again, we talked a bit about before what the government does without people knowing. And, you know, it's not beyond, I have no evidence of it, but it's not beyond, you know, it's not beyond the realm of possibility. And I think it's very frightening because the more I look at this, that, again, we talked about us being this kind of little ecosystem with our plants and our animals, et cetera, in this kind of delicate harmony. And the same thing goes for us in relation to all the other planets, because there seems to be enormous effects from the sun and the moon and the other planets on us, on our energetic frequencies.
Well, if HARP can affect the ionosphere with different geomagnetic reflections on what? Plants, the Earth, human beings, they claim they might be able to affect the weather. Hold on, Lynn. We're here at the top of the hour already. We'll be right back. Lynn McTaggart is my guest, and this is the voice of Crystal.
And I'm ready for the times to get better.
Covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard, and they use them to help.
Take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Make no mistake about it, you're all on this ride. Good morning from the high desert across the ocean. Lynn McTaggart is my guest, and we're talking about intention. We're talking about the field, or if you will, the force. Intent. This is really interesting, and this may seem like a really pathetic example to all of you, but it's one that my wife and I believe in. You may recall we had a very ill, you know, we're cat people, we have cats, and we had a very ill cat. Abby, in fact, actually died on the table, as it were, and he was in with a super vet. She was really a super vet who breathed for him. Can you imagine that with a cat? She breathed for our cat and to keep him alive. And he came back. Ultimately, he came back. But during the time that he was ill, I was telling my wife that that we'd have to get another cat. We would have to continue on. We feel like we should care for cats. And we put out this intent to get another cat, to have another cat, to have another animal in our lives. And that's when Yeti came bounding into our yard. And it's kind of like the intent went out, and oh boy, there was the answer. And it turned out our cat got well. Now we have four cats, right? But the intent went out to call a cat to arrive, and believe me, this one arrived. He was just jumping up and down, bounding around our yard, you know, like, here I am, I'm home, take me. And then he got inside and he looked at the other cats and he said, who are you people? I thought I was the only one. Anyway, it's like we sent out an intent and we got our answer. Lynn?
Well, I think that's, you know, that kind of story gets repeated all the time to me about people who on their own little basis try sending out excuse me, intentions in all regards and, you know, get a result. Now, a lot of people who work on this, again, this isn't necessarily scientific, but a lot of people working and, you know, self-help type people who talk about it, and also gurus of a variety of Eastern type philosophies, say that when you send out an intention, send it out as though it's already happened. You know,
mm-hmm.
I have a new cat, kind of thing. I am getting a new cat. You know, instead of future tense, I would like a new cat, something like that. It's just my new cat is here, and it's like. And they also say send it out and then forget about it. And a lot of healers talk about this too. They send out their healing intent, and then they go on to something else.
Yes, well, be careful what you intend. a lot of the paranormal, particularly as it involves precognition, for example, appears to be so random in nature. There's nothing consistent about the ability or the power, and it seems to come unbidden. It just happens. But it's so irregular that scientists can't get their hands wrapped around it because it's not that repeatable, and they just love repeatable things.
Well, I think this is why, you know, it comes back to the idea of us wanting to do experiments and to work on it. I mean, a lot of scientists just don't believe it, so they don't look at it.
Right.
And many of the people doing paranormal experiments are working on certain things with random machines or whatever, but haven't pushed the boat out as much as can be pushed out on things like, you know, practical uses of this. You know, how do we use this stuff in real life? And that's, as I say, that's what we're looking at the moment.
But again, you would admit that it is not necessarily a consistent thing, not provable every single time and repeatable for science every single time.
Well, I think the reason it's not a consistent thing is comes back to what we were talking about, Art, about, you know, the effect of the energies on our own energy. We talked about the effect of the sun, but, you know, aside from having profound biological effects, it also seems to have a great effect on our ability to access the field, to have psychic experiences. Some of the studies that have been done shown that when the Earth is, you know, when the sun is quiet, when it's a nice low-level geomagnetic day,
yes,
you know, it's like a clear day and you can see forever. You know, brain slow way activity increases. That's the kind of thing that, you know, that we need for more meditative effects.
Well, very well put. So in other words, the sun is kind of like a giant white noise generator, and when it's slamming at us, it sort of fogs the field, as it were.
Yeah, exactly. It's that, you know, it's like a metronome for us, because it sets up so many things. There are certain harmonics of the sun, mm-hmm. that are available, that more or less become our rhythms at birth. And it seems then that thereafter, there are all these explosive effects we've talked about seem to interfere with our sort of ability to pick up things beyond our own senses. Now, when the Earth is noisy, they found that there's some disturbances in electrical balances of the brain, and your EEG readings are destabilized.
Mm-hmm.
So your brain's not working so synchronistically, and it seems to upset our energetic equilibrium. And the studies that have been done show that in these noisy geomagnetic days, we're not so good at remote viewing. So I always tell people that, you know, a good thing to do is to check the NOAA website and check out what the sun's doing before you try doing some of this.
I do it every day. Every day. Oh, I do. I'm a ham radio operator, and, you know, that affects radio operation to a great degree. And I've always felt that it affects everything to a great degree. How could it not? The sun is the center of our universe.
Absolutely.
Our little universe, anyway. And there's so much energy from it that to imagine that it does not affect us in our lives every day is crazy.
Well, I think it's really interesting that, you know, they've even got a science now called chronoastrobiology, which is looking at the effect of these, you know, of the sun and the other planets on our, you know, on our bodies. And they're finding that our living things have rhythms that correspond with solar activity, and that, as I say, these sort of harmonics and subharmonics seem to affect a lot of things. Even our longevity seems to be related to certain solar cycles. So it's quite, you know, it's quite mystifying, and it's really hard for us to get our heads around that we would again be, you know, in energetic harmony with the whole universe.
All right, Lynn, I want to take some calls, and I want to remind my audience on the lines that, listen, folks, we're talking across the Atlantic Ocean, so we have a little bit of a satellite delay. Therefore, when we're doing an interview like this in Europe, it's best when you come on if you don't try to get too interactive, but rather pose your question and then stop and pause and allow the guest to answer. Let's give it a try. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Lynn McTaggart. Hi.
Hey, how you doing, Art?
All right, sir.
All right. Sorry about the music background. I'm in a mall right now.
I see. Well, go ahead.
Okay. Here's a question I've got for you, and that is this. Is there ever a such thing as what might be considered a psychic infection?
A psychic infection. Expand on what you mean.
Okay. Back in 1999, I was working a motel desk in Phoenix, and there were four gentlemen that had walked in and checked in for the night. Three of them I didn't interact with, but just one. And I remember these guys just because they were a little bit quirky. Well, I would see these guys again approximately 2 years later in the newspaper on September 19th. And between that time, I used to keep seeing two things. One was...
All right, we don't have much time here, so again,
okay.
Psychic infection, what do you mean?
Well, that's what I mean. I made contact with these guys, and for a little while, I kept seeing incidences which eventually did take place on September 11th.
Oh, I see. All right, Lynn?
Well, I think it's more a case that you forecast what happened, that you picked up something about them and were able to forecast, and you picked up what they call precognitive information. So you picked up ESP-wise information about what they were going to do. And that's very much the case. As I mentioned, there was a study of the people's dreams of people about 9/11, and there were some incredible dreams. They weren't always of the Twin Towers. Some people in Philadelphia saw buildings in Philadelphia being hit by planes, but they'd picked up the general information. So, again, if you think about this just big energy field of information of all great big one now as opposed to past and future, then you just picked up information from the field ahead of time, in a sense.
Wildcard line, you're on the air with Lynn McTaggart, who's in London. Hello.
Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes.
Turn your radio off, please.
Yeah, I'm turning it off. I'm sorry. I didn't know about the...
Okay, we'll wait until your radio's off. Okay.
There was an experiment done at a Midwestern university back in the 70s, and it was grant money in reference to the possibility of a mind experiment, if you will, in reference to... taking and just concentrating on the construction of a barn, and university students stood around in a circle, concentrated on all of the construction elements, be it the bolts and the
in the old days, they used to take a hammer and nails and help build it. Now you're saying they stand around and instruct it to get
done. They actually took an old barn that they went and studied carefully before they went and did this experiment with these university students, and they actually demolished the barn, and that was the end of the experiment.
They demolished the barn?
Yes, the students did with a mind experiment. Yes, sir.
Well, I'd sure love to see the documentation of that. You hear of anything like that, Lynn?
I haven't, no. I mean, I've heard of certain things with, you know, group thought, et cetera, but nothing as powerful as that in
immediately
terms of mind
dramatic.
Over matter.
Yeah. As we said earlier, these things seem to happen at the margins of what we can measure, meaning computers spitting out random numbers. We can cause it to start going non-random, but that's a very light feather touch in the physical world, right, Lynn?
Well, yeah. I mean, there is some work with, you know, psychokinesis, you know, which is the real big mind over matter effects. And there's work with, about poltergeists. But it's been hard to study people like Uri Geller, for instance, who was, you know, a lot of the scientists working on with him in the 70s said mm-hmm. he wasn't a fake. I mean, he was really bending spoons. But every time they tried to actually put him in a lab and put a video camera on him, they couldn't get him. He couldn't do it. So it was some sort of zone he got into where he just couldn't be observed in it. I mean, they would see him doing it, but on an informal basis, but not in a lab.
And you believe that firmly. A skeptic, for example, would say, sorry, case made. He can't do it in front of the scientists. Therefore, it ain't.
No, he did it in front of the scientists. He couldn't do it in front of a video camera. No, I think that, and many of these scientists, and they're credible, skeptical, good frontier scientists, were seeing this happening not only with him, but with young people, too. Young children watching Geller would also be able to bend spoons. It's like an information channel that we lose when we get older, except certain very gifted people keep that channel open. So they said it worked and they saw incredible things. I mean, Ed Mitchell talked about a pin he'd lost, and he thought he'd actually left it on the moon. You know, he wasn't really sure. You know, he was one of the astronauts. And while he was having lunch with Uri Geller, he chomped on something, and it hurt his mouth, and he opened his mouth, and there was the pin. And
are you serious? Are you serious?
No, yeah. This is, I mean, Ed Mitchell telling me this. You know, he's absolutely serious. And
wow.
Those kinds of things happened all the time with Geller.
I've interviewed Edgar Mitchell, and never once has he told me this story. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's a really interesting story, but he said it was happening all the time with Uri, because of course he was working with some of the scientists in the 70s trying to get funding for things like studies of Uri Geller. He was, you know, very interested in consciousness, as you well know, but that was one of the most interesting things that happened to him. There the pin came out in his mouth.
Huh.
So it was, you know, things like that, he said, were happening all the time. So there's definitely a, you know, an energy around people like that, and in many cases, the young seem to be able to have, they seem to be much easier at, you know, much better at bending spoons and automatic at it than people like us.
Certainly, a lot of people I've interviewed, Lynn, about ghosts and about hauntings and about poltergeist kind of activity, that's all come, even the majority of it, from young teenage girls.
Yeah, they say, well, noisy energies, you know, usually I think they say it's teenagers who are just, you know, disgruntled kids are the ones who tend to have poltergeists. So it's almost like a physical manifestation of their mental state. I think a lot more needs to be done in that, you know, that effect, in that mode. But the science that does exist, I think, is spectacular enough. So even though I don't think we've got evidence yet of demolishing a barn by thought alone, remember we've got Buddhist monks being studied by Harvard people and seeing that they can, you know, they can dry freezing blankets in a matter of minutes with their minds. That's
all right.
Pretty good, too.
It is. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Lynn McTaggart. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
turn your radio off, please?
Okay.
Good. We have a delay, and it's very confusing. Okay, go ahead.
Bell?
Yes.
Yes, I want to tell you I appreciate your program. You delve into very serious things.
We do.
My comment is this, is that all the things you have talked about the past week that I've been listening to you are all answered by Scripture. For example, your guest tonight, she is right on when she thinks that things are interconnected, and I'll explain why. She said no one understands God. Well, the scriptures tell us that he the heavens and the earth cannot contain him. In other words, he's larger than all the creation he has created.
Got it, sir. Hold on. We're here at the bottom of the hour. Actually, I do want to delve into this a little bit, that perhaps these powers were understood and explained very carefully if you read the Bible. I wonder if that could be true. That's actually a pretty interesting question. It's like talking about American natives, only this time it's the Bible. We'll ask.
Get it in writing with the After Dark newsletter. Subscribe by calling 1-888-727-5505.
In fact, you know what? We actually have time to ask. Where am I going? We're in here earlier. So let's ask that, Lynn. Is it possible that some of this is written in the Bible?
Well, definitely. I mean, and that's the interesting thing. I think it's maybe been our interpretation of the Bible. We think of it as being one set thing, but the Bible is almost a blueprint for all sorts of things and interpretations. And, you know, you have to realize that one of the best psychokinetic person of all was Jesus Christ. I mean, he was able to, and Moses was able to part the waves, and...
Yeah, that's where I was going. That's exactly what I was thinking about.
You know, I mean, Jesus healed the sick. He was able to have the loaves and fishes expand to fit the crowd. And there are all sorts of things like that that these kinds of aware people, and, of course, in his case, you know, something beyond a person, of course, was able to do. And so there are many things in the Bible that you would say, well, now science is finally catching up with it. And I think that's my point about the field, my book and this work, is that it's catching up with where it's providing a science of religion.
Yes.
And so it's not antithetical to it. It's just providing the nuts and bolts of why this works.
Bingo. Exactly, bingo. That's exactly what I was trying to say all along. Now, the music. So, yes. Perhaps it used to be in abundance, and it's always been, and it's just sort of gone away, and now we're beginning to discover it in a different and strange way. That's what we're talking about, this field, this power, this all that is. Maybe it was pretty big in biblical times, and we lost it. I'm Art Bell in the middle of the night, which is where Coast to Coast AM and these kind of topics reside.
Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Well, maybe there's more to this world than we imagine, isn't there? That's what we're talking about, I guess, this morning. So much more to this world. so much more going on all around us than any of us even imagine. Lynn, you mentioned longevity, for example. In the Bible, people lived at one time to be over 900 years of age. Seas were parted, miracles were done, seeming mind over matter, things were achieved on a somewhat regular basis. So it's such a superb question, because is it possible that this is something very, very old that we, you know, the human race once just about had mastered, or was certainly controlling to a very large degree, and we've somehow forgotten about it, or it slipped away from us over the years with technological development?
Well, it very well could be. I mean, you have to look at many things. You know, it's difficult to say, because some of what is in the Bible may be metaphorical. You know, we have to look at some of that. But it is likely that many things that have slipped away certainly have been present in all kinds of native cultures. As I say, if you look around the world, whether it's the Maoris or the Native Americans or Polynesian cultures, they all believe in this kind of force, this energy, and they all believe in tapping into it. They all believe in getting into an alpha state, as we call it, in a state of slowing your brain down, of light meditation. And you can get there whether you use a mantra or rosary beads. You know, my Italian grandmother used to use rosary beads all the time. She would just get into a zone, and I realized that she was meditating when she was praying. And that is, you know, also getting into that state. And it's a state of greater receptivity as well, and why you hear many people getting things like religious visions, et cetera, when they're in that state. So these kinds of cultures, as well as, you know, the civilization written about in the Bible, knew much more about this intuitively than us with our science in ripping ourselves apart and defining ourselves as being so separate.
All right. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Lynn McTaggart in London. Hello.
Yes, my name is Phil.
Hello, Phil.
Hi. Who am I speaking with?
Art Bell.
Hi, Art. I just really wanted to mention about Uri Geller and myself. I've been listening to your show now for about 4 years, and I've finally been able to get through, thankfully. Hello?
Okay. What about Uri Geller?
Well, she had mentioned the fact that he was pretty much able to bend spoons, and then he was able to do it in a scientific, in front of the scientists, but not really in front of the video camera.
Right.
Well, if you really take a look at that, in fact, he really was ultimately proven to be a charlatan to some degree. Now, he probably had very good powers. And the reason I say this is, I think, rather, was... Hello?
Yes. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I'm getting clicks.
I hear the clicks. Go ahead. Ignore them.
The reason I say this is because I know you're very skeptical about... what's his name? The main cynic of all time. And you guys sometimes even laugh at him, who has the outstanding check... James Randi.
Oh, yes.
Even aside of him, it is very important to have the cynics to drive to the truth. Me being one of them, yet I have quote-unquote people tell me ESP because I can guess the numbers out of their head from 1 to 100.
Mm-hmm.
With a rate of about 80% hit, and yet I am not a believer. I'm still waiting for facts to come in on my own self. Never minding that, Uri Geller, not being able to do it because it was a video camera. Well, he had done this on TV in front of many cameras with many people watching him under many circumstances.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that The Tonight Show, for example, is the same as a laboratory with a video camera pointed at you for scientific documentation. It's not the same thing. I don't know. There's a lot of controversy about Uri Geller, isn't there, Lynn?
Well, yeah, and the reason I wanted to bring in people like Edgar Mitchell, because Edgar Mitchell and Hal Puthoff is a physicist who ran the Scientific Research Institute studies on remote viewing, and he's an extremely well-respected physicist, and he and Mitchell worked with Geller and they controlled for all sorts of for fraud. And they are convinced that he was not a fraud, that he was doing this, and it wasn't clever. They had controlled for it. And these are skeptical scientists. So, and Mitchell's an astrophysicist as well as being an astronaut. And I think that it's very easy to be a James Randi. But when you actually, and to just try to poke holes in things and just say it doesn't exist, because all of our brains are now we're all programmed with science as we know it to believe that, you know, these sorts of things don't exist. The point is, as I said earlier in the show, some of the best science in the world is being done on parapsychology. Well, it is more blinded, it is more scientific, and there is no question that this goes on.
Well, I sure want to ask Ed Mitchell about that thing that appeared in his mouth. I'm on to that one. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Lynn McTaggart in London. Hi.
Good morning, Art and Lynn. I tell my children that God is like Plato, and that we are the Plato creations, and that the substance of everything, God is the substance of all things, and everything is created from that substance, and that we are co-creators. We can help create the shape that we are, of the form that we are and of our life. And I'm wondering how this fits in with Lynn's perspective. I think the Jell-O example is what got me thinking about this.
It really sounds like it fits, Lynn.
Well, yeah. It's just, we're just using different words here, but if we talk about the zero-point field being the absolute, being God, in a sense, we're just talking about what is a, instead of us thinking of God as a man with a long beard, maybe he is a giant energy field, and he is the creator through that field of all of us. And that is exactly what we're saying. So as I say, it's not antithetical to religion. It's just providing a different framework, a scientific framework, and showing that this is really the truth.
Well, it sounded very similar. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Lynn McTaggart. Hi. Hello?
Yes?
Extinguish your radio for us, please.
Yes?
Thank you. And proceed. You're on the air.
Okay. Am I supposed to ask my question now?
Sure.
I'm concerned about the propaganda that's being put out through political parties in relation to terror. How is this affecting the consciousness? It certainly isn't helping any.
That's a really good question.
That is a great question.
Yeah.
Well, again, it's creating a field of intent that many people would say is very much affecting us in Britain and in America about being terribly fearful about and needlessly fearful about terrorist attacks. Not to say we shouldn't be vigilant, etc., but certainly that kind of idea is, I think many ideas are an infection that take hold, and they affect the energy field. And certainly, one could argue that a similar situation happened in Germany in the 40s with Hitler, in the 30s and 40s with Hitler. And there's, possibly some truth to that. And I suppose now it's important for us to all send a positive intention for our president, current president and future president, whoever that is, to handle this wisely.
Lynn, I would like to believe that positive intent is stronger than negative intent, that positive intent is more likely going to be successful than negative intent. But I've got to be honest with you, I don't believe that. I don't. I think it is just a neutral power. It seems to me a neutral power that can be, perhaps affected or driven equally by positive or negative intent.
Well, you know, it could be. I mean, I think this is one of the things that we're looking at. We're going to be looking at, we're working on in our experiments. We're going to be looking at in, you know, we have this conference in London in October, that is going to have a lot of these consciousness people and workshops that will be looking at the effect of intent. And to see, I mean, I think from the evidence we have, Art, the evidence of the memory of water, as I say, it looks like positive intent has a lot of, you know, has stronger effect. There's also the work of John Diamond, which is really interesting. Dr. John Diamond, who sort of prefigured people like David Hawkins with this whole idea with kinesiology that you can measure thoughts making your body weak. And he's done this over thousands of studies in many, many years. And he's found that, you know, bad thoughts make our body weak. Negative thoughts make our body weak, but that we can be immune to bad thoughts if you concentrate on what he calls a homing thought, which is your life's purpose. And I find this very interesting and intriguing and needing more experiment on, because if this is true, it may well be that there is a central thought one can keep in their mind to stay strong in the face of negative intent.
Doctors know it, don't they? I mean, they really seem to go out of their way to work on the patient's intent to get well. I mean, they give it a tremendous amount of credit because they work really hard on it, trying to get the patient in the right frame of mind. So I guess they know it works, right?
Well, I think that, you know, positive intent. I mean, there's many people, there's a great story I always tell, this guy with leukemia, didn't know he had leukemia, and he was going along just doing absolutely fine. And then he went into his doctor's office and read his notes upside down and saw his diagnosis was leukemia. And a week later he died. And there was no change in his biology. I mean, the doctors could find no reason for his sudden deterioration other than the fact that he thought he had a life-threatening illness.
Well, listen, there was a Wire story about a week ago, I think, of a man, God, Lynn, this is incredible, I'm just now remembering, a man who had been misdiagnosed with AIDS. And the story was the man had become ill. He had lost a tremendous amount of weight. He thought he was going to die. And X number of years later, they found out it was a total misdiagnosis. And I grabbed that story and I went, wow. There is an example. I mean, he came down. He had all the symptoms of AIDS.
Yeah, well they find, I mean I think they find this, it's why a lot of people by the same token are affected by the so-called placebo effect. If they think they're taking a medicine and it's going to make them better, they get better.
Yeah, I know there's some astronomical percentage attached to that. You don't recall what it is, do you?
I don't have it, but I mean there's many times where they'll say a drug doesn't work because it doesn't work any better than the placebo effect, and I think that's more the point, that the placebo effect works. You know,
well, I wonder how high a hurdle you have to shoot for to get better than the placebo effect. Is it 30%, 40%?
It's, I mean,
pretty,
it's
high.
Really, you know, well, with those kinds of great percentages, why bother working out a drug? Just tell people, give them a sugar pill and tell them they're going to get better with it. And if that works, well, then that's the purpose of it, isn't it?
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Lynn McTaggart. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. Actually, it was my intent to get on the air tonight.
Well, see, you prove it.
Yeah, I called 8 times and got cut off 8 times.
All right, anyway, intent worked.
Yeah, I know, that's awesome. My name is Brent from Portland, and this is actually the first time I've ever gotten through.
Okay, Brent.
A little bit of a background. I believe in what you believe, that there is a higher power, that there is no coincidences, and that we also have a unique connection with animals and other life. A little bit of background. I've been a missionary with kids. I studied psychology in college, and I'm a Pisces, so for astrologers out there...
Okay, well, that's all great, but you got to get to a question because we're very short on time.
My question is, for Lynn, what do you think about the concept that maybe the higher power, if you believe in God... who created us, how he gives us the ability to create. And so in a way, when science is created, it's like a blueprint. And so it comes through us, but it's not perfect because we are not God, or we are not the field. therefore when it comes out through science, it's missing that quantum physics thing that she was talking about.
Lynn?
Okay. Well, I got to tell you that if you got to, this is hard to get your mind around, but if we are all connected through this energy field, we are the field. We're not separate. We're not something else. We're just doing this energy dance with the field. So we are all part of it, i.e. we are all God. And we are all, it's us, up to us to get rid of our paradigms and our thoughts about being separate. That's the biggest problem of all. And from understanding that we're not separate comes tremendous knowledge about how to use this and how to co-create our world.
Right, but on one level, then, it just doesn't seem like it's happening. I mean, we sit here and talk about it on this program with people who are probably basically in sympathy with it, but all of society is going, or most of it anyway, the other way. It's a busy world where these sorts of things are not thought about. It's an increasingly complex technical world where we're attached to computers, and so we're just going shkoom in the other direction.
Well, we're going in the other direction, but, you know, pockets of resistance are coming up all over the place. Your audience being one giant one.
A big pocket of resistance.
You know, and, you know, people are saying there's something more out there than the lonely view of ourselves that we're given. And
yes,
that people, this is why, you know, so many people are working the whole new age view of how to, you know, recreate, you know, what we think about ourselves is happening in so many different ways. And, you know, we're finding it. As I say, we're having little groups are forming all over Britain and the UK, Britain and the US, of people trying to create, you know, field communities where they are working on this together. And, you know, for anybody interested, please do, you know, visit our website and tap into this, because this is what we're trying to promote, is people's greater understanding of how to live a better and more unified life.
All right, and that website is www.livingthefieldalltogether.com, right?
That's it. And I also want to mention about our conference. We've got people like Edgar Mitchell and Raymond Moody, Stanley Krippner, remote viewing people like Skip Atwater and Joe McMonagle. And the whole purpose of that is it's on the 9th and 10th of October in London. And the whole purpose is to help people really understand and work on developing the remote viewing out-of-body experience, dream forecasting powers. And it's we've had some of them before, and they are usually transforming experiences.
All right. And it's going to be where and when again, please?
It's in London, and it's on the 9th and 10th of October. It's in central London, and they can find out more details through our website.
All right. Perhaps one last question. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. How are you doing?
Okay, sir. Not a lot of time, so if you got
right.
a quick one, lay it on us.
Okay, three quick points. The first thing is, I believe it was George Norrie who was talking about this, about how Bob Hope, people went to see him die, and it was like a totally different reality. Do you know what I'm talking about there?
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. Lynn, it's a lot to go into right now. But there is this oddity, I guess it's an oddity, where a lot of people have the same memory of the same event, like somebody dying, for example. They thought they had died, and yet they're alive. And it's like kind of like an alternate timeline sort of thing.
Well, remember we're talking about, you know, if you get back to the whole idea of non-locality occurs in time as well as space, and they found that in scientific experiments now, then we are living in alternate timelines. In other words, there is no real timeline.
Gotcha.
Hard to get our minds around, but that's possibly the way it works. And also the idea of thinking that you were dead and you weren't, or picking up information. It's like kids who have reincarnation views.
Lynn?
I think it's
Lynn, I've got to stop you. We're out of time. Show's over. We got to go. It's been a joy having you on the air.
Well, thank you very much, Art. It's been great to be here.
Thank you, and you take care. That's Lynn Taggart from, you know, way over there, London. Here's Crystal with the right words, the exact words to get us out of here. Good night.
Midnight in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. Woo!
magical journey will take us on a ride.